Alston versus the Commonwealth. Ms. Dalton, we're ready when you are, ma'am.
I could reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please.
5 minutes reserved. Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Our argument is that the Commonwealth failed to prove that Alston had the specific intent to commit larceny, assault and battery, or any felony other than murder, rape, robbery, or arson at the time that he entered the house, and therefore there's insufficient evidence to support his conviction for statutory burglary. And while intent may be shown by the circumstances and by the defendant's conduct or statements, Alston's intent here is not ambiguous. The evidence clearly established that Alston's intent when he entered the home was to evade the police. Alston was running from the police. He actually had jumped out of a moving car, and then a foot pursuit continued. During the foot pursuit, he ran into the victim's home to hide from the police. When Alston entered the home, he either mistakenly thought it was the home of someone he knew, or he had no idea who lived there. He did not know and could not know if someone was inside. The victim...
If the defendant was going inside in order to evade the police, why wouldn't felony eluding be sufficient to support this conviction for statutory burglary? That was the felony that he was in the process of doing was the felony eluding.
The reason that felony eluding would not support a conviction is because even though Alston was charged and pled guilty to felony eluding, the felony was completed before he entered the home. The felony portion of the eluding statute requires endangerment, and the statute limits the endangerment element to driving behavior.
Okay.
At the time of his entry into the house, Alston was no longer driving, he was running on foot. Therefore, his intent could not have been to commit felony eluding. Alston could not have known whether or not anyone was inside the house. The victim, in fact, was not inside the house when Alston entered it. She was outside walking her dog and testified that he ran by her and into the home through the open door. There's nothing in the record to indicate that Alston's actions toward the victim were intended to do anything more than help him avoid capture by the police. And while that is not an innocent intent, it is also not an act prohibited by the burglary statute. The facts strongly support the inference that any intent to commit assault and battery or abduction arose only after the encounter with the victim inside the home, and in fact was a counter-response to her response to his presence. The Commonwealth's theory of intent at trial was that Alston entered the home with either the intent to commit assault and battery and or the intent to commit abduction and or the intent to commit eluding. But the Commonwealth basically argued and still argues that Alston's intent was to get away from the police and to do whatever was necessary to prevent the police from finding him. But intent to do whatever is necessary to evade the police is either specific intent to evade the police or general intent. And the Commonwealth must prove that Alston had the specific intent to commit an act prohibited by Virginia Code 18.291. Thus, the trial court erred, convicting Alston of statutory burglary by finding that Alston was a man on the run who had the general intent to do whatever was necessary to keep from being caught by the police.
Thank you, ma'am.
May it please the court, good afternoon. Catherine Adelfio on behalf of the Commonwealth. Intent is a question of fact, and the trial court's determination that the defendant, at the time that he entered into the home, intended to do whatever it took to avoid capture is not plainly wrong or without evidence to support it.
Counsel, let me ask you about that. The Commonwealth's position to the trial court was that the intent was to do whatever was necessary to keep from getting caught because he was a man on the run.
Yes, Your Honor.
What crime is that?
I think that the Commonwealth mentioned in other portions of their argument that he was willing to commit assault or abduction in order to avoid capture by the police. If it took him assaulting the resident inside the home, or it took him abducting the resident, unlawfully detaining them in such a way, then that was sufficient to satisfy 18.2-91.
So, to satisfy the definition of intent to do whatever was necessary to keep from getting caught relies entirely on the facts that occurred once he and the homeowner were in the home.
I would disagree, Your Honor. I think that you can consider his desperation in entering an unlocked home in the middle of the day. I think that you can presume, it's within the realm of an ordinary mind, to know that when you enter into an open door during the middle of the day that there is going to be someone inside the house, probably. And secondly, you then can consider his immediate actions, as you noted, once he entered into the home. And third, you can also, the trial court was entitled to consider his lies about how he allegedly knew someone in the home as evidence of his guilt. If I could draw a comparison, I think that if this court considers Taylor and Vincent, which were cited by the defendant on brief, those cases are clearly distinguishable. In Vincent, their appellate court overturned the conviction for burglary because the evidence was that the defendant, once he entered into the business, did not actually take anything. He went inside, caused destruction, and then he left. That is not the case in this case. In this case, you have someone who, upon immediate resistance from the homeowner, attacks her. That shows that at the time that he entered into the home, he intended to do assault or battery. This isn't a case where the defendant saw the homeowner and then ran out the back door, as he did once the police arrived. He stayed in the home and assaulted her immediately. This case is also not similar to Taylor, which was cited by the petitioner defendant on brief, where the conviction for burglary predicated on an intent to commit sexual assault on a minor was overturned. In that case, the defendant was acquitted of committing any sort of sexual assault on the minor child. And so the Court of Appeals, the appellate court, determined that because the court could not rely on the defendant's actions upon entering into the home and his purported assault on the victim, you could not consider those actions in determining what his intent was upon entering into the home. Here, you have the defendant's actions upon entering the home, and those reflect back and illuminate what his intent was when he entered into the home.
So the Commonwealth's position at trial and your position on appeal is that the specific intent was to commit either assault or assault and battery.
Or kidnapping, Your Honor.
Or kidnapping.
In fact, he was convicted of abduction. And the defendant argued that he could not have known that anyone was in the house. And if I might draw a comparison, an individual can be convicted of burglary with the intent to commit larceny when he enters into a home in which he does not know that there's any property is actually available. But he can still, even if he is not sure there's property inside to steal, he can be convicted of.
Is there a case burglary you're relying on, or is that just your hypothetical?
That's just my hypothetical.
So somebody could enter
with
an abandoned
burglarious
warehouse
tools, and if there's other indicia of intent to commit larceny. And in this case, similarly, Austin could have intended to commit assault or abduction without knowing for certain that there was someone in the home. And given the fact that he entered the home during the daytime, and there was an open door, and there was people all around in the neighborhood, in fact, who were yelling, "Go, get in the house, get in the house," I think it was reasonable, or a reasonable person would assume that someone, that the homeowner is in the area, is around, and that there's a reason why the door is open, i.e. that the homeowner is in the home.
But you agree that the intent has to form before?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Okay.
But the actions after the entry can illuminate and demonstrate what the intent was upon the entry. And as noted, the defendant attacked the victim as soon as she put up any sort of resistance. And given that he was eluding the police, he was running through the neighborhood, and then immediately he hit her and tried to drag her up the stairs so that he would not be detected by the police. That is indicative of the fact that he, when he entered into the home, was willing to do whatever was necessary, whether it's assault or battery or abduction, to avoid capture. And as I noted before, he could have kept on running out the door as soon as Ray entered into the home, and he did not do that. Unless the court has any other questions.
No, thank you.
I would ask the court to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Adelphi. Ms. Dalton?
I think the only reasonable inference as to why Mr. Austin chose that house is that the door was open. I think it is abundantly clear from the Commonwealth's evidence at trial that Mr. Alston was merely running from the police. And the fact that Alston did assault and abduct Ray does not mean that that was his intent when he entered the house. And that is most clear from the fact that there was an interaction between the two inside the house where he's trying to get her to be quiet, she's trying to get him to leave her house, and it was that interaction, or during that interaction, that any intent to assault her or to abduct her was formed.
Counsel, you just said that you thought the records was clear that the reason he entered this particular home was because the door was open. Is that an inference from the record, or is there someone who testified to that?
I think it's an inference. I don't think anybody testified to that.
Okay.
And for these reasons, Mr. Alston asked that this court reverse his conviction for statutory burglary.
Very well. Thank you. We'll come down and